Welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast, brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com.
Jay, that makes 14 straight Big 12 conference titles for Bill Self. Just how big is this?
Well, for starters, it has never been done in the history of college basketball.
Bringing you all of the KU Jayhawk scoop, straight from the players, coaches, and recruits.
JK, I understand you've got some breaking news for us?
I do. I've just learned that Les Miles and his staff have landed another big recruit.
For all of the latest news, analysis, and discussion, go online to JayhawkSlant.com. Now, here's the staff from Jayhawk Slant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Inside Slant Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. I'm your host, Randy Withers, and we have a damn good show lined up for you guys today. We're going to talk KU basketball. We're going to get into Jayhawk football. We're going to talk recruiting with our resident staff experts, Shea Wildebor and John Kirby. We have special guests. National basketball recruiting analyst Eric Bossy is going to join us, as well as former KU football player and analyst Johnny Beck. Let me bring in my two partners. First off, the man from the Allen Fieldhouse Suite, our man on the basketball beat, Shea Wildebor. Shea, how are you this morning?
Bro, I'm doing well, man. Had a nice little sleep. I'm ready to get this. Hey, I got an interesting fact here. Kemper, my son, is training with Johnny Beck right now.
Really?
Yeah, I take him every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday down the street, and he trains with the Beck man.
That's awesome. I know there are a lot of kids that are working with Johnny, and I've heard a lot of really good things about him.
Kemper loves him. It's great, man. I mean, I think it's Kemper and like three or four other kids, but it's Kemper said it's just a great experience for him, and he loves spending time with Johnny. I've never met Johnny, but just according to Kemper, he's a really cool dude.
I love when kids get a chance to work with other kids in a small group training environment like that with somebody that really knows their stuff, because not only do they compete against each other and get better, a lot of times those kids end up being good friends. They stick together, and I think it's awesome. I love that stuff.
Yeah, man. So life is good, brother.
That's good. That's good. Let me bring in John Kirby. JK, how are you this evening, afternoon, morning, whatever time of day it is?
Well, I got up a little earlier than Shea did. So he's doing better than I am. And you know what? I want to tell you this. My son trained with Johnny Beck. He's a baseball player at Olathe East High School, and he loved Johnny Beck, and he does a great job with those kids. So, man, we got to get – hey, Johnny, we're dishing out some cash, Shay, to Johnny Beck.
We are, baby. We are.
We need to talk to Johnny about training us. I think we should go in and have like an Inside Slant edition with Johnny Beck, where people can see if we can survive a Johnny Beck workout.
Randy, I don't know if he can do anything for us, brother.
We may be a little too far gone. I think you got a point there.
We just need a lot of water breaks.
Yes. No kidding. We're going to need lots of water, lots of cold towels, and maybe a ride to the ER afterwards. So
I'll take it.
Now that we have talked about the fact that none of us are physically prepared really to do much of anything other than this podcast, we have to start with what is clearly the most important topic on the Jayhawk Slant message boards right now. With Les Miles' squad battling on the field and on the recruiting trail, Bill Self and the boys still smarting from 28 turnovers in the opener against Duke, the most pressing issue is what our friend Don Reddy posted on boards about his new wife and the way she hangs the toilet paper.
Oh, my goodness.
John, you made the point. You know, he's only a month in with this young lady. There's still time to fix things, because he's already wondering if he's made a mistake. Gentlemen, let's get your thoughts. This is a monumental turning. This is a potential turning point, a watershed moment in Don Reddy's marriage, and he's only 30 days in.
Hey, it's like taking a timeout. He can go in, take a timeout, sit her down. It's like halftime adjustment, you know. My wife does it. All right, she puts the toilet paper against the wall in the little roll. Yet me and my teenage boys, we just always have it right there on the sink, right where you can just reach up and grab it. And I always joke with her, "Hey, do that for the company, okay?" put that role on there when the company comes over. So Don Reddy, man, he's got his hands full.
Shay, what are your thoughts, pro or con, on toilet paper against the wall?
What if I told you that this household that I live in with a grown man and a 13-year-old boy prefer wet wipes? Is that
Whoa.
Bad?
Okay, that I did not expect that at all.
But no, you can't have it against the wall. Listen, I'm the type of guy that you put it on the counter and it's readily available when you need it.
Absolutely.
Why do you put it against the wall? I mean,
for
it's,
company.
It's making it. It's
exactly. That's what you show off. You look like, hey, look, we're not complete. We're not savages here. We don't leave sitting on the sink when there are people to see it.
Yeah, but in this picture of his, she's got it completely like going against the grain. You got to flip that around and then so you can, I don't know. You guys know where I think
it is. Well, the direction of the paper, that's a whole nother topic.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about
that.
That's
too fancy for me. I don't have, listen, that's fancy stuff.
See, you want to talk about fancy. See, I'm adapting in my bathroom at our house. You know, I have like there's one of those little shelves on the wall just behind the toilet. So for a long time, I just put the roll up there.
For sure.
My wife decided that, you know, even though there's nobody in the house other than she and I, two dogs and two cats, she decided that was just a little rough. So she got me one of those little toilet paper racks. It stands on the floor next to the toilet. And it's nice, but the only issue is the cat is constantly either A, unwinding all the toilet paper off of it, or B, knocking it over all together and waking the whole house at 4 a.m. So, you know, I don't know where I stand on this, but Don Reddy's got, I agree with John, he's got to call timeout and sit her down, get her focused, and explain to her, hey, this is the system. This, we got to believe in the system. We got to stick with this. Stick with what works.
Well, since Randy, you need a timeout, Randy.
Hey, since we started this conversation, we got more issues than we got when we started. So Shay uses wet wipes. And then
yes.
Randy, you had to turn around to get the toilet paper every time. That ain't no good. That's no good having to turn your whole body.
Oh, no. See, I didn't have to turn. The shelf is close enough that I just basically reach over my, like, I could reach my hand up just above my shoulder, and it's right there.
Okay.
It was real close.
It should take minimal effort.
Agree. And that's the nice thing about having it on the rack in front of me is it's like, you know, it's right there. I don't even have to reach really. It's right beside my leg. But it, like I say, anybody that has pets, specifically cats, know that cats refuse to let you go to the bathroom alone ever. I saw a meme the other day that said, I have to pee. And then the cat is screaming, no, we have to pee. And that's exactly how it goes. If you're going to the restroom, the cat's going with you. And even if you're not in there, the cat is going to go in there and tear up the toilet paper because you're not there with them. So it's, I feel like I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Well, note to self, stay with my dog. Stay with my two dogs then.
Yes. Yes. Dogs only.
Well, I've told people, it's funny because people are like, you have cats and you have dogs. And yeah, they get along really well. The cats believe that they are just smaller dogs. And the dogs look at the cats like they think they're just weird dogs. So the cats are kind of entitled. They get up on the back of the furniture and the dogs are kind of like, well, I know I can't fit up there because I'd fall off. So, it's an odd arrangement. But, you know, it's like they said in Ghostbusters, cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria.
I'm going to be like Kirby. I'm going to stick with my two dogs and call it a day.
Speaking of your two dogs, Shay, let's talk about the recruiting trail for the Kansas Jayhawks, the men's basketball program, where they didn't land a dog. No, they went out and landed a big-time five-star in this latest recruiting class. We're going to have Eric Bossy join us here in a few minutes to really get in-depth and give us the national perception. Shay, tell us what your thoughts are on this early signing period for Bill Self and the Jayhawks.
You know, Randy, when the allegations first came down, and I didn't say this publicly, I might have should have, but I know how people get. Kansas fans, what I've learned during my time on this job is Kansas fans are emotionally invested in everything that happens with this program.
Wait, Kansas fans are emotionally invested?
Absolutely. Like I've never seen. Whether it be wins or losses, recruiting, everything. I mean, they're just... I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it.
Might you say they're a little fragile?
Yes, yes, they are, for sure. And so when the allegations came down, I literally had no idea what to expect. I had a few thoughts, a few feelings about how this might happen, this early signing period. They would hit the JUCO route heavy, which obviously they got a really talented kid and from out of Indian Hills. That they would take lower level kids that might not have the type of impact that you thought they would.
I think you even said that on the podcast, actually.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Or that they would maybe wait and check the graduation, the grad transfers, and see how that went. So today, on the 14th of November, I'm stunned. I mean, I am at the way that this staff has been able to put together the seventh best class in 2020. You know, it started with, I believe Jethro Muscadin might have been the first, and then Tyon Grant Foster, and then obviously now Bryce Thompson. And when he committed, I knew it was coming, but I was still shocked because here's a guy that could have really gone anywhere. I mean, North Carolina wanted him desperately. You know, Kansas was in there from the very beginning. You had the local schools, Oklahoma State. And this is a kid that's going to come in right away and play heavy minutes. I mean, if he's here, if he's in Lawrence longer than 2 years, I'll be shocked. So the way that
with that in mind, just real quick, Shay, why looking at all those other schools, everybody else you listed, why Kansas, especially with everything looming over this program?
I think he had heard enough from Jeff Long and Bill Self to feel comfortable with the situation. Listen, his dad, Rod Thompson, was coached by Bill. They've known each other for decades. He knows the staff. I think, you know, he came up here multiple times. And I think on his official visit, he was really able to sit down. And not only Bryce, but Rod and Mrs. Thompson look face-to-face itself and get the facts. And they were comfortable enough in what they heard. And I think once they felt comfortable, it was over. I mean, there was no way he was going to Carolina. He wasn't going that far away from school. Bryce, you know, this is a kid that at one point in his recruitment was, I believe, like the 55th best player in the class. Now he's number 19. A kid that is competitive. Yeah, as competitive as any kid in this class. He wants to play at the highest level. He wants to be coached by the best. And I think once he got over that feeling of what's going to happen to Kansas and was comfortable with what he heard, his mind was made up. There was no doubt about it. You know, the friendship with – and, you know, Bryce said something when he committed live that kind of caught my attention. He's like, if I had known this staff as well as I did – or if they had just gotten involved late, I probably wouldn't committed. But the fact that he knew this staff as well as you know, I think he said the first time he met Coach Self, he was like 3 or 4 years old. So he's known these guys for a long time, and it just goes to show that relationships matter. I mean, he really could have eliminated Kansas, or he could have, you know, put him on the back burner, but he always kept Kansas up front. And Kansas was honest with him and up front, and it paid off.
I know it's with the early signing period, we seem to always get late news, specifically with basketball. And, you know, I mean, there were schools that suddenly were announcing guys yesterday that nobody really expected to sign with them. Are there other recruits that you're watching that you think KU could be in play with? And will there be more spots that this staff is looking to fill?
Yeah, I mean, there's the JUCO kid out in Chipola Junior College, Mariel Matting, 6'10", who told me that he was going to visit after the season. Whether that happens or not, I have no idea. But the latest development is a Latrell Josel, a 5'10". I don't necessarily say I'd say true point guard, maybe more of a combo, from Central High School in Keller, Texas, 3-star kid. And my understanding is that this kid's going to sign early, and he really likes Kansas. So I'm going to leave it at that, and people can interpret what they will. Don't know a lot about him. I don't know if he's a kid that's going to come in like right away and have an immediate impact. Year one or year two, he might be a guy over time that I don't know that plays his way into the rotation and is able to do some things. I know Bossy said, or Eric Bossy, I was talking to him yesterday. He said, I think they kind of see a little bit of Frank Mason in him. Maybe a guy that could come in and help over time. So right now those are the only two guys. Now, listen, you have to understand that there's going to be coaching changes. Guys are going to want to opt out. There's going to be grad transfers. So I think a lot of what happens depends on that, and also who decides to leave. I mean, you've got you got Silvio De Souza. Right now it doesn't look like it, but he could eventually have a decision to make. excuse me. You're going to have, obviously, Udoka Azubuike's gone. My guess is that Devon Dotson will be gone. And who knows? I don't anticipate anybody leaving early. I know Jalen Wilson, who's injured now, was probably kind of hoping to have the type of season where he might be able to consider that at the end. I wouldn't expect a Tristan Inaruna or a Christian Braun. And they still got a scholarship left over from Mackie McBride. So, yeah, I think the staff, if there's a spots open, that they will do whatever they can to better this team. Because, you don't know what's going to happen a year from now or 2 years from now with the NCAA. So they'll do everything they can to prepare themselves to make sure that this team has everything that it needs. But let me say this. They've got a really, really, really solid foundation. The guys I just mentioned, Tristan Inaruna, unless he just blows up, is going to be around for a while. Christian Braun is going to be around for a while. And I think Jalen Wilson will be around for a while. Excuse me. You have DeJuan Harris, who's redshirting this year. You have Jethro Muscadin, who's going to be a huge piece of this puzzle down the line. Grant Foster will be around for 2 years. You got David McCormick, who's still got this year and then two more years. So there's some really good pieces in place. Guys like Bryce are never going to stick around for a long time. But if you remember, on that championship team in 2008, you had guys like Russell Robinson, that was a four-year guy. You had Darnell, that was a four-year guy. I think you had Brandon Rush, that was a three-year guy. And I think he only came back, obviously, because of the ACL. But, you need those program guys. You need guys that have been around for a while, guys that have been through the wars. And, a year, two, 3 years from now, Kansas will certainly have those guys with the last two recruiting classes.
This is the first basketball talk that we've been able to get on a podcast for since the Duke loss and the win over UNC Greensboro since then. What have you seen, Shea, in the first two games from this team? And do you think we are going to see more of the Jayhawks with just one big man on the floor at a time?
Oh, man. First of all, the Duke loss, Randy, was killer. 28 turnovers. 28. I still don't understand. And so
I think
many
it's 29 now. I think they just gave it away again.
They did, yeah. It's so many unforced. Going down, got a 3-on-1 break in transition, and you delay the pass and goes flying out of bounds. Here's the thing with me. Here's the thing, and this is just looking at it from my perspective. I'm not a Hall of Fame coach. Bill Self has forgotten more basketball than I'll ever know. But the two big man thing just seems to complicate things down low. You've got a guy in Udoka Azubuike that absolutely has to have space. He has to. He's got to be able to move. Not very much, but he's got to have that lane. And then you've got a guy like David McCormick and Silvio De Souza, who are the same. It just gets too clogged. Now, listen, if you had a guy like Mitch, or let's say a guy like Darrell Arthur, for instance, that could step outside and pop some shots and play around and be comfortable on the court in all areas, it would be different. But to me, it's a mess. It's not a mess, but it's just there's not enough room for everybody to operate. I love the 4-out-1-in system. I love it. It gives Doth the opportunity, or Silvio, or David, to be comfortable down low, and then guys on the perimeter to make plays. When you have Oach, and you have Devon, and you have Marcus, and whether it be Isaiah Moss, or Tristan Inaruna, or Christian Braun, it just opens things up. You can get out and run. You got guys that can hit shots. You got guys that can drive and dish. Defenses have to be honest with Doak. And it's just a more fluid it's a more fluid system, man. It just goes. Now, do I expect Bill to abandon the two big man system? Absolutely not. I think a lot of it will depend on matchups, how guys are playing, time, score, momentum, and all those things. But for me, the last few years of quote unquote small ball have been really exciting and successful. I know last year was a little bit different, obviously, because Doak was out, and Doak, these guys got to learn how to play together. We got to remember that Ocha Iabaji at this time last year was a redshirt. Silvio De Souza hadn't played for a year, and Doak in two of the last 3 years has played 11 and 9 games respectively. So, you know, I think there's a situation too where these guys got to get comfortable with each other. The only mainstays have been Devon and Marcus Garrett. So that there's got to be a certain level of comfort there, and I think that those guys are still trying to figure all of that out. You know, but at the same time, I just don't know how you're going to do playing a 6'11 and 7 foot guy down low, and Doak just needs room to move. He's got to have that space. He's a space eater, and if there's someone in there and the lane is clogged and congested, I just don't know how he's going to be able to operate at his best.
Shane, now I know you're limited on time because you are actually headed to Lawrence just as soon as we finish up with the podcast to cover Bill Self's press conference, and we will have you on again next week. Any other little tidbits you'd like to throw out? I know you've given a ton of insight already. Anything that got your attention right now that you want to cover before you get moving?
No, man, I'm ready to get going. I saw last night. Listen, this is great. Not great, but I love that college basketball is back. I saw Villanova got beat by like 40 points at Ohio State. You know, I know Seton Hall and Michigan State are playing tonight. It's to me, it's just an exciting time. I love college basketball. I love to be back on the grind. You know, Bill Self and his staff wrapped up a really good early signing period. I would have never seen this a few months ago. So, I'm just glad to be back in it and moving and ready to see what happens.
Awesome. That's Shea Wildebor, our man on the KU basketball beat. Shea, thanks for joining us. We will talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, brother. Have a good day.
All right, that's Shea. We're going to go ahead and stick with basketball, but now we're going to head over to the studio line where John Kirby has Rivals National Basketball recruiting analyst Eric Bossy on the line, who's going to give us some of his perspective on what the Jayhawks have been able to do in this early signing period with recruiting.
Our first guest is Eric Bossy, the National Basketball Recruiting Analyst for Rivals.com. E-Boss, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, JK?
Well, I'm doing well. I know this is a crazy time for you, and I really appreciate you coming on.
No, I appreciate it. Everything's going.
Going well. You know, I want to start this off, you know, the biggest news, the latest news of the commitments. Bryce Thompson announced he will attend KU. You know, what were your thoughts on his decision? And having seen him play, where do you see him fitting in Bill Self's program?
Sure. Let's start with the decision. I think many Jayhawk fans know who follow me, whether it be on Twitter or on the Slant or wherever, know that I've predicted Bryce to Kansas now here for at least a few weeks. And it's something where even when there was a bit of despair and doom and gloom that he may be going elsewhere, I said that, you know, no, Kansas still has a really strong chance here. You know, it's something where they just had to keep answering some questions, probably mostly with his mother more than with Bryce or his father, Rod, but they got everything taken care of. And, you know, Bryce actually told me over the weekend that Kansas was the choice, you know, asked me to keep it quiet till he could make his announcement, all that stuff. And obviously we see how that played out yesterday. But it's huge news. I think that he's a guy who comes in and really with the way that Bill Self plays, he can play anywhere, one, two, or three. He can handle the ball and is a very good passer, but his primary asset is definitely his scoring. He shoots well from range. He's skilled at creating his own shot. He's not an eye-popping athlete or anything like that, but he has gotten stronger and bigger over the years, and he's one of those guys, and all he cares about is getting in the gym and getting better. You know, ever since I first met him as a freshman and sat down with him and his father, and they asked for some things about, you know, how to handle the recruiting process and just, you know, what he would need to focus on to be a top player. All he cared about was hearing, how can I get better? How can I get better? Some kids ask you about things, and then when you give them an opinion, they just get mad at you and think you're hating on them. Bryce, he takes all that feedback, and he gets in the gym, and he puts it to use.
You know, I want to move on to the next high school prospect, Jethro Muscadin from Louisville. He's a 4-star prospect. You know, what are your thoughts on him, and where do you see him fitting in?
Yeah, Jethro is an interesting one. You know, I'll be up front that I'm maybe not quite as high on him as some others on our staff, and not because I don't think he has a chance to be a good player. I just would like to see some consistency from him. He's been a little bit of a tease. At times, you see him, he's long, he can run, he's got a pretty good-looking shot for a big guy, so he can do some things, but He hasn't always put up the biggest numbers. You know, at Sunrise Christian last year, he really didn't play a lot and wasn't all that productive. Now, maybe that's part of sitting behind a stud like Nfali Dante, who's waiting on his eligibility at Oregon. Or maybe it's a matter of he got into the gym this spring and said, hey, you know, I'm too good to be not being more productive, because he definitely was better during the summer. So he's one I'm really looking forward to seeing this year, but I don't know that there's really going to be a lot of pressure on him to come in and perform right away. You know, Mitch Lightfoot redshirting, I think, takes a lot of pressure off. You know, it certainly doesn't look like Silvio D'Souza is going to be going anywhere right now. And of course, got David McCormick coming back. So there's not a lot of pressure on him. And I think he's a guy that they want to get in, get into their weight program and work with him on his consistency. Because if he can get consistent, then he's going to outplay his current ranking. But until he achieves that consistency, he's a little bit of a question mark.
Wrapping this thing up in terms of the recruits, you've got tie-in Grant Foster from Indian Hills Community College. I think you went up and just saw him recently. What are your thoughts on him?
Sure did. You know, Tyon is a guy, he's a Kansas City native, Kansas City, Kansas. I've been watching him again since he's a freshman, sophomore. And if you'd have told me 2 years ago when he was a senior in high school that he would be a Kansas-level player at this point, I probably would have laughed at you. But, you know, late growth spurts and just a guy, you know, sometimes these guys, it clicks for them at different times. And late in the year, his freshman year in Indian Hills is when really things really started coming on for him. And he blew up over the summer, got recognized as one of the best JUCO players in the country. I saw him in early October and was just taken with his ability to handle the ball and create for himself and others. How much his jump shot has improved, how much he can get to the rim, you know, his athleticism, his versatility on defense. And then I went and saw him play, as you mentioned, in Indian Hills a couple of weeks ago against a guy named Jay Scrub, who many consider to be the best JUCO player in the country. And while they didn't match up head-to-head all that often, if we were going by that game, Grant Foster was by far the better player. He was more dynamic off the dribble, way more active defensively. Just had a little bit more juice in him. And what I really like about him is if you look at him, physically he could pass for a high school sophomore. So I think he's still got a lot of maturing to do. When he gets into a strength program like Kansas, I think he's going to take off. And, you know, he's putting up huge numbers early in the year, and I really think Kansas stole one. And at least of the JUCO players that I've seen, and I've seen most of the high-end ones right now, I would probably give him the nod as the best JUCO player in the country right now. And I think he's one of those guys that, when Kansas fans first started hearing about him, they might have been like, not so sure about this one. He really didn't put up big numbers as a freshman in junior college. You know, what are we doing here? But, you know, I think this guy is a legitimate NBA draft or NBA prospect. I don't expect him to leave out of junior college, but, you know, NBA teams certainly know about him now, and I've been fielding a lot of calls for background information on him. And I think this is a case where, you know, Kansas heard about a local guy who had really gotten a lot better, and rather than poo-pooing it because he wasn't really a known high school guy, they went and did their homework and got that thing shut down immediately. Like, they wrapped him up within 2 or 3 weeks because they saw him and realized just how good he was. And he's a guy that I'd be really excited about if I was a Jayhawk fan.
Eric, I want to wrap this up with you just to get your thoughts, basically taking all three of these guys, lumping them in, more of a big picture thing, just what your thoughts are on all three of them as a group. And something else I want to get your take on, you know, I visited a couple message boards yesterday and I saw people say, man, you know, Kansas is supposed to be under these NCAA allegations, but it looked like, you know, it doesn't look like it slowed Bill Self down at all. So I want to get your take on that. And then just your thoughts on the all three of these guys combined as a group.
Yeah, I think it's a good group. I think it mostly addresses their needs. You know, a lot of it's, I think you kind of almost need to, he's part of last year's recruiting group, but I think you also need to include Juwan Harris into this since he's going to be playing with this group for the first time ever. So they've got a point guard there. So it checks a lot of boxes. It's high end talent. It's a legitimate top 10 class nationally. And, you know, like you mentioned about, everyone knows there's obviously a cloud with NCAA allegations hanging over their heads. There was a cloud last year with the FBI trial hanging over their heads. And nobody is going to dispute that it has impacted the recruiting. Bill Self will be the first to tell you that. But to put this kind of class together amid a lot of negative headlines and surely a lot of negative recruiting is a pretty big deal. And it's a thing where, you know, I don't think any reasonable Kansas fan would be questioning Bill Self and his ability to get things done. But to do what him and his staff have done, and, you know, Norm Roberts, Jarence Howard, Kirk Townsend, they deserve a lot of credit in helping this happen. It's really hard to question them and to not have faith in them being able to get the job done when they do stuff like this with kind of a deck of cards stacked against them, so to speak.
Well, Eric, I know, man, this is a crazy time with all the signings going on and you guys covering everything all over the country, and I really appreciate you jumping on and giving all the Kansas fans your take on the class.
Thanks for having me, John.
All right, Eric, we'll talk to you soon.
Great insight there from Bossy, who is one of the best in the business on the national scene, giving his thoughts on the Jayhawks and Bill Self's recruiting, what they've been able to pull together in the early signing period. We're going to move on over to the football side of things, step into the Memorial Slant Suite with our man John Kirby. John, we didn't do a podcast during the bye week. Took a little bit of time off for ourselves, and I think it was well-deserved. I know you've been working hard and staying really busy. We haven't had a chance to really talk about the loss to Kansas State. Let's not spend too much time on that one, okay?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You and Shay were chatting about Duke, and I'm sitting here thinking, flush that one down the toilet. Well, that's the same thing. You know, when you and I are around the players, Randy, they talk about flushing wins and flushing losses and moving on to the next one. So, hey, yes. We'll kind of do that with our podcast here on the football side. But, you know, the Kansas State game, it is what it is. Kansas State got off the bus. They were the more physical team. They were ready to play football. You know, I thought they just lined up and really smacked KU around. And, listen, we could play that game again, and my guess is a lot may not change because the difference in that game was up front on the line of scrimmage. And when that happens, sometimes you don't have an answer for it. I credit the Kansas State defensive coordinator. I thought he had a nice plan. It looked like they were playing some cover two and cover three. They were bailing deep. They weren't letting the KU players get behind them because leading up to that game, the Jayhawks had some success with the deep ball and some throws vertically downfield. And Kansas State did a pretty good job of taking that away. And they made Carter Stanley try to fit those 8 to 10, you know, yard pass intermediate routes in front of him, and he struggled a little bit that day with it. So give them credit, and offensively, hey, they executed. They knocked KU back on the option game. Boy, they really took KU out of the option game to where they had free running downfield all day. So hey, that game, it is what it is. 2 weeks ago, it's over. Now the Jayhawks have got to move on.
You're right. The bye week, I believe, came at a really good time for the program, for these players. And you and I have both already had a chance to be around the guys this week. And it seems like, and I'm not just saying this, I felt it, and I actually commented to a few people when I was down there Tuesday night. There is a really surprising level of energy among the kids that I was around. You know, I got a chance to talk to Puka Tuesday night, as well as Andrew Parchment and Kyron Johnson. And those guys, gosh, they've got just as much energy now as they had maybe a month ago. There's just such a different vibe around the program this year. Is that kind of what you picked up on when you were down there?
Well, I did. I sensed a lot of positivity. And, you know, Randy, on bye weeks, sometimes there's arguments whether they come at good times or not. I can say after a bad loss sometimes, you just want to play. You know, you're like, hey, we don't want a bye week. We just want to get back on the field that next Saturday and get back to playing, because if you had a disappointing game, a lot of times you want to get back out there because you don't want that 2 weeks to go by. In this situation, I think it was good for the program to get that time off. You know, Brent Dearman gets another week to work with the offense. DJ Elliott can take his staff and sit there and look at the Kansas State game and say, here's some things we got to fix, because they're going to have a tough opponent this week. And I think also getting healthy, you know, getting some of those guys that were banged up and nicks and bruises, get those guys healed and be ready to go for these final three games. And I know Oklahoma State, they had a bye week too, so they've got the same situation. But I really think that the bye week in this situation helped the Jayhawks.
I agree with you completely. Before we get into the Oklahoma State game and start previewing the matchup with the Cowboys, as well as updating where things stand on the recruiting trail. I want to turn back over to the studio line where you're going to welcome in former Kansas football kicker Johnny Beck, who also works as an analyst for the Jayhawk Network.
We are joined by Johnny Beck, a former Kansas football player, and he's part of the KU pre- and post-game show for the football program. Johnny, how's it going?
Going well. Just getting ready for this weekend.
You know, I want to ask you, I know when you played, I feel old because I still remember writing the recruiting article about you.
Yeah, that was a ways back, but, you know, I know that's when you guys first started getting going, and what an awesome turnaround and where Rivals has gone over the past 20 years.
Well, I watched Les Miles, and he's trying to turn this program around, and I remember some of those teams you played on, and you were in that transition, mm-hmm. I believe, from Allen to Mangino, but take us back into those years and what you remember of Mark Mangino coming in and the work ethic that it took to get the program turned around.
So when I first got there as a true freshman, I was fortunate enough to win the starting job as the starting kicker. And Terry Allen had recruited me, really liked what he had staff-wise and things like that, but didn't really know a lot about the daily routine. And, you know, that season didn't go as well as we thought. And Terry Allen was fired 6 games into the season. And as a true freshman, you know, didn't really understand what had happened or any of that. And right before we left for Christmas break, they hired Coach Mangino from University of Oklahoma. And I remember him saying to us before we left for Christmas break, now, mind you, this is my first Christmas break. It's a 30-day break. You're basically given an eternity. And he said, you know, everything that you wanted to hear from a head coach, but he said, just remember when you guys get back on January 22nd, okay, we're going to start turning this thing around. Okay, well, all right. Well, we came back and, you know, we thought we had did what we needed to do. And within that first week, I think we lost maybe 18 to 20 scholarship guys. And, you know, his message to us was we basically have to reboot this entire program. We got to get the guys out that are just kind of freelancing around. We got to get the guys out that are second guessing the coaching staff. We got to get the guys out that are okay with losing. And obviously what comes with that is a guy that wanted to bring some toughness, a guy that wanted to bring, you know, his way of how it's worked at K-State, how it worked at Oklahoma, and obviously infiltrate that into a program that hadn't had, you know, a lot of success in the last 10 or 15 years. And, you know, the message was always, you know, we're going to have to outwork all of our opponents. We're going to have to make sure that we put in a few extra days when maybe the other teams are still celebrating a bowl victory or something like that. In the summer, we don't really have the opportunity to take days off. We have to make sure that we're working 5 days a week and all that good stuff. And what you saw was a bunch of guys that, you know, really built confidence in each other. And, you know, that first year when we went out there and played, you know, it was a 2-10 season, but we could also see a lot of bright spots. And those bright spots were, you know, guys jogging off the field, even if we were losing by, you know, 20, 25 points. It was guys still encouraging each other if, let's say, I missed a field goal. You know, and it was kind of that program that, you know, you read about in the Alabamas and the Notre Dames and USC's, of guys just out there competing at a very high level. But obviously it all started that first day in winter conditioning.
Well, I know you've watched the program a lot. I mean, what are your early impressions of Les Miles as he tries to turn this around?
Well, I see a lot of energy in the program. I'm not saying that that hasn't been something that's lacked in the last few years, but I just think it's more consistent. And I see it from, you know, the coaches. I see it from the players. I see it from the support staff. Everybody seems to be encouraged and, you know, understand that there's an opportunity to get better. And that's all you can ask for with these players and these coaches, that every day they get a little bit better. And, you know, I know the K-State game might have been a little bit of a mishap, but at the same time, I think it grabbed K-State's attention enough to know that, hey, you know what, we're going to be in a little bit of a dogfight with these guys. And maybe in years past, they would have just kind of shrugged off, oh, those are just KU fans just kind of talking. So I think, you know, what they've been able to do this year with building depth You know, that's one thing that we've seen a lack of the last, you know, 5 or 10 years with this team is if one guy goes down, it's like, oh boy, who do we have next? And now you're starting to see those guys coming in as freshmen and sophomore, really making some impact plays and getting some meaningful minutes. And then the last thing is I think that these coaches that they have on staff, you know, you look at a Brent Dearman, they mesh well with the players. And when you're going to be around these coaches for as many minutes and hours as they are during the course of the season and off season, you know, you really have to like to be around those guys. And I think that the coaches obviously bring the most out of these guys, but at the same time, they're willing to sit you down and just kind of talk to you about life and things like that, as most of these kids that are coming in aren't from around this area. So, you know, they fall in that father-like figure category. And I think Les Miles has done a good job of hiring those coaches.
Sticking with Brent Dearman, what have you seen from the offense and what have you seen from his style since he's taken over these last three games?
Well, I like what Carter Stanley, you know, has said about him. He brings a freshness. He brings kind of that, you know, that energy to the table every single practice day. He challenges his guys that, you know, we're only as good as what our quarterbacks, receivers, offensive linemen, and running backs are. So coach knows that he has to instill that confidence in those guys for them to produce. Now, remember, a lot of these guys are the same guys that have been on the team for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. Carter Stanley's the guy who's been in the program for 5 years. And to see his development this year has just been amazing, because you know that Brent Dearman's that guy that's kind of instilled that in him. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, what's going to happen when Les Miles moves on, I think you look at a guy like Brent Dearman as somebody that could definitely become a program favorite and put his name in that running for, you know, the next head coach or head coach in waiting, however they're going to do it.
You know, we talked about you being part of a coaching change when you were a player. So when you look at the turnaround and the hard work that you guys went through, and I know you talked about all the scholarship guys that left in the first, you know, days or weeks of practice, you know, if you had a message to say to fans about, listen, this doesn't turn overnight, this is going to take work, I mean, what would your message be?
You know, the first thing you talk to about fans is, you know, the players really do feed off them at a home game. And, you know, it's really exciting to run out there and see, you know, the stadium with 40, 50,000 people there, you know, cheering for you, everything like that. I don't blame fans for, you know, maybe not going as much in the past recent years, because I don't think that the message that was told to them from the coaches and the product on the field matched up. And I think what you're starting to see is these coaches are backing up what they're saying. And you've got guys that are going hard. You've got guys that are finishing the game. You've got guys that, regardless of what the scoreboard says, you know, they're still being encouraging. So as a fan, you know, you have to realize that I'm a fan as well, and I get upset. And I say things that I'm like, you know what? I need to understand that these kids are 18, 19, 20 years old and that they're going to make mistakes. But the last thing I want to do as a fan is be degrading or be negative about it. Remember, we're going to cheer for these guys. If they're not doing well, we're going to cheer for them if they're doing really well. And the hardest thing to do as a fan is to, you know, understand that the support is for that kid, for those coaches, for this program. And yes, it's a lot more fun to be a fan when you're winning, but those guys need the fan support even when they're not doing well, because I just think that helps get the program turned around and back on its feet a lot sooner.
You got three games left in the season. They're obviously on paper going to be underdogs in all three of those. What would you like to see to close out the season from the team?
I think you look at it as, you know, after the K-State game, you were given a bye week. And hopefully the message to those guys is, you know, we have a three-game season left. And, you know, one of our goals in that season is to make a bowl game. And we're still in line to do that. So we look at each week as a opportunity to go 1-0. And the next opponent up, Oklahoma State, we're going on the road. They're a 17 to 18 point favorite in the game. But I don't think the KU guys look at that as, oh, you know what, we're going to get killed. I think they look at it as, guys, we've got an opportunity here to go on the road, Big 12 game. Obviously, it's going to be a special day for Les Miles as he goes back to Oklahoma State for the first time. And I think these guys are going to be ready to go. And like I said, they can't look at the next game. They can't look at the last game. They've got to focus on this one. If they win this one, they move on to next week. But the opportunity is still there to meet your meet one of your team goals. And, you know, if they can win this one against Oklahoma, you're just going to continue to build that momentum towards that next game.
That is great insight from Johnny Beck, a former KU football player and part of the KU analyst team on the pre- and post-game show. Hey, Johnny, I really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Great stuff there from Johnny Beck. I know as we were talking about in the intro, you and Shea both have great connections with him, and your kids have worked a lot with him. Looking ahead to this weekend, this looks like a tall order on paper when you try to figure out who has the edge in Stillwater against the Cowboys. How do you see this matchup?
Yeah, Randy, on paper, this does look like a tough one. And I know the guys in Vegas have it at, like, I don't know, 17, 18 points. I think the line's been going back and forth a little bit. And this will be a tough game. I really believe that. And when I say matchups, I look at the way Oklahoma State can move the ball on the ground with Hubbard, who's one of the best running backs in the country, Sanders, the quarterback. I think he's pretty dynamic. I went back and watched him on film and looked at some of his runs, and he's quick, and he does a great job when plays break down. So the secondary and the linebackers are really going to have to be on guard. I talked to Kyle Mayberry a little bit about that this week, that, you know, when you're a corner and you're playing against somebody like Sanders, who's running for, I want to say it was like 70, 80 yards a game, and he does a really nice job in the quarterback run game. You've got to be so aware, because Oklahoma State takes a lot of deep shots, okay? And I know their stud receiver Wallace is out, but they've still got Dylan Stoner. They've got some other guys that can make plays. So when you're running downfield and you got guys taking you down on deep post patterns and you're still trying to figure out, hey, I got my guy here, but I've also got to be aware that if that quarterback takes off, I may have to help. So in the terms of the Kansas defense, listen, Kansas is playing hard. They're playing with a lot of effort. They just got knocked off the ball against Kansas State. I think the fear a little bit in this one is you can be lined upright, you can be coached upright, but stopping Hubbard is a whole different deal, because defenses all year have been scheming to stop him, and nobody has. And the Jayhawks, with the run, have struggled with the run. So I think they've got to stay home, stay in their lanes, try to do what they can to slow down Hubbard. They've got to keep an eye on Sanders. I'd almost get to the point where, you know, it's like playing Kansas State. You want them to throw the football. You want Kansas State to throw the football as much as they can. I almost think this is the same way, because Sanders has had some turnovers. They have laid the ball on the carpet some. So, you know, I think it's a tough game. It's going to be a tough matchup, and it doesn't matter if you're schemed up, right? Oklahoma State just may be better man for man. Now, where I think the Jayhawks have an advantage or a way to stay in the game is when you flip it around to the offensive side. I think they can move the ball on Oklahoma State. You know, there's been some injuries in and out on Oklahoma State's defense. They've just been okay. They've given up some points. I want to say they're seventh in the conference in scoring defense. Their secondary has given up plays. So this might be a chance now to get back and take some shots and throw the deep ball. Now, it's interesting, Randy, because I was telling somebody the other day, in Major League Baseball, when you watch a kid get called up from the minors and he comes in, and he goes like 4 for 11 in his first series. And then his next series, he comes back and he goes like 3 for 9. And the guy's batting like .350 just coming out of the minors. Those guys will send advanced scouts to the next homestand or the 1-2 ahead of them and try to figure out tendencies to get guys out. I mean, they spend a lot of money in the major leagues to do that. And next thing you know, you see this guy's batting average start dropping down. Because they're able to figure out holes in his swing. Maybe he doesn't, you know, maybe he doesn't have quick enough hands and adjust to inside fastballs or whatever it is, they'll find holes. Well, the Kansas State defensive coordinator put together a pretty good game plan, and he took that deep ball away and made Carter Stanley try to throw that intermediate pass. So it will be interesting what Kansas and Dearman does on the offensive side now to counteract that, because they've now seen a defense change to try to stop what they were doing well. So it's kind of a chess game. It will be interesting what they can do. I think Kansas can move the football, and I think there's going to be some points put up in this. I think it's going to be a fun football game. But, man, I'll tell you, Les Miles getting a chance to go back to Stillwater, where he started his head coaching career. I know he thinks very highly of Stillwater and the people around Oklahoma State. Always had a good relationship and been fairly close with Gundy, the head coach, who said a lot of good things about Les this week. But I just think in the end, if I'm putting my money on it, you know, you've just got to think Oklahoma State's the better team playing at home. So I'm going to go Oklahoma State 38, Kansas 28. Give me yours.
You know, I think one of the things that really sticks out to me about this game, obviously you talk about Chuba Hubbard, who is, I think he may well be the best back in the country behind Taylor at Wisconsin. And that's not a shot at all against Puka Williams. Puka Williams is a tremendous talent, but Chuba is just a different kind of back. And when I was talking with with Kyron Johnson this week, that was the thing that he said. He was like, you know, practicing against an elite caliber runner like that, it makes you be more lane sound, but at the same time, they're so different physically. And I think the challenge posed by Chuba Hubbard plus a guy that, in my opinion, is one of the best offensive line coaches in the country, in Charlie Dickey, who left the Kansas State staff after Coach Snyder retired and moved to Oklahoma State and joined staff there in Stillwater. I think the combination of him, his offensive line strategies, his ability to get guys to play just exceptional assignment football. They are always sound. They are always prepared. And it's going to make the job of the Kansas front seven that much more difficult, because they're going to do everything they can to cut that defense in ways that just make it very difficult for a very young group of linebackers, for the most part, guys that were inexperienced, didn't play much until this year, a defensive line that is a little undermanned because of scholarship numbers and just the fact that it's a veteran group. But that's the thing, is after this year, there are going to be a number of departures just because of guys exhausting their eligibility. I see this one. It's going to be difficult for the Jayhawks to control that ground game. I think you're right. They have to force them to pass just as much as possible. I think they can score with them. I think they can stay in this game. I think it will be fun to watch. I think Oklahoma State, like you'd say, is just too much. I'm thinking I'm going to go a little bit higher on the state side, but about the same number for the Jayhawks. I'm going to say 41-24 Oklahoma State.
You know, you bring up a good point with Dickey. I'm telling you, I have talked to a lot of college football coaches who say he is one of the best offensive line guys in the country.
And he's phenomenal.
What you're seeing right now, keep in mind, Chris Klieman inherited an excellent situation up front with five senior offensive linemen that were all groomed and coached by Dickey. So it will be interesting going forward when a new rotation of offensive linemen come through Kansas State. Can they coach those new kids up and develop them like Dickey did? Because he's one of the best.
Agree. I agree with you completely. And that was one of the things that I asked Kyron about when I was over there on Tuesday night in Lawrence. I said, you know, when you're going against a team that you know the offensive front is coached by the, you know, former offensive line coach from Kansas State, and how good he was at assignment football and also getting blockers to the second level just almost every single play, sometimes getting guys to the third level, for God's sakes. And I said, what kind of challenge does that pose? And he said, he was like, you know, you have to be incredibly gap sound. You have to be prepared. I think in this one of the big things is guys have to keep their shoulders square. Veteran offensive line coach like Dickey that likes to do a lot of movement, pulling, zone stepping, things like that. It's so important to stay square. And against a defensive front that is a little green, even though there are a lot of guys up front that are later in their college careers, there's a decent amount of inexperience there. And especially against a veteran offensive line coach like Charlie Dickey that is such a technician, that gets his guys to play so fundamentally sound, that, you know, a big factor is if DJ Elliott and Quan Drake can have that defensive front playing well and then be able to sustain it, which is the problem. That's the depth there is going to be tricky. But Charlie Dickey is going to be a big factor in this game. I don't think there's anybody that could make me think otherwise. So, John, now that we've kind of broken down the game, things look like they are certainly heating up on the recruiting trail. There's a lot of movement with names coming and names going at this point, which has been sparking a lot of spirited discussion in the Memorial Stadium Slant Suite. I want to first start with two recruits who are no longer committed to the Jayhawks in offensive lineman Jackson Stoffen and Tommy Brandt.
Yeah, Randy, you know, it's a part of the recruiting game that we've just all come to know. Everybody yes. that's listening to this podcast is likely somehow affiliated with our website, which is really built around a lot of recruiting talk and discussion and news. And, you know, we've got a lot of great fans who keep up with that type of thing. And yes, if you look over the past, I don't know, if you went back in time, you know, the recruits have always had the hammer. I always say they've had the hammer because they've always been able to decommit and go wherever they want. And the schools never really had a lot of that say, okay? Well, I think over the last 5 years, I'd say, you're starting to see more schools drop recruits or move in different directions. And it's kind of evened out in a little game of tug of war a little bit. So in this situation, I don't think this is Kansas looking at two kids who they liked, they got committed, and they said, hey, we just need to drop you because we can do better, or we're going to drop you and just move on. I think what happens in something like this, and again, I know I talked to Jackson Stoffen, and the Kansas doctors were able to get his medical reports, and they were able to look over things. And he and Tommy Brandt both suffered season-ending injuries and had knee surgery. I mean, you know, that's a pretty big thing. Well, these guys are both linemen. These guys are, you know, they've got a rehab. And when you're talking about a kid, and again, I'm not saying this is the exact reason. I'm just trying to, you know, be a voice here that comes to people and lets them know what happens in the recruiting game. So they look over these records, they see things, and they go, okay, these are both kids. You're going to try to bring in your program, and you're going to have to get 30, 40 pounds put on them. You know, I know Jackson was going to come in at semester. Well, now you've got this injury, and you're saying you got to get him in the weight room. You got to put more weight on him. They're going to have to carry more weight on those knees. And you never know what happens, because I've talked to coaches before where they've looked at medical reports of kids with surgeries, and their team doctors in the past have come back and said, listen, this is a bad knee injury. You're talking about quite a bit of recovery time here. So we don't really know the deal. I know Brandt and Stoffen were great kids, loved talking to them. But, you know, the Kansas staff also has to act in the best interest of their program. And I believe the magic number is 20 this year. That's the number they're going to be on. So they can't sit there and possibly take risks depending on what they're hearing, depends on the injury. And they've got to protect their program. So my guess is it had a little bit to do with that. But, you know, they've got to move on, and they've got to look. And I've already seen that Stoffen and Brand are already starting to get some opportunities, which is great to see.
We're just inside of 5 weeks away from the first national signing day for the class of 2020. And there seems to be a lot of new information coming out about where this staff is on the recruiting trail, things that are happening. I'm just going to give you the floor and let you tell our listeners the latest. Give them an idea of some of the information, maybe those that aren't already subscribers to Jayhawkslant.com, just what kind of insight we offer and what they need to know, because recruiting is probably the hottest topic right now around this football program.
Yeah, well, whoever's listening probably needs to just sit down and grab a drink and sit in their chair for a little bit then, because, well, and I won't, I'll try not to get too long-winded.
I've got my quick trip tea here right now.
Well, you might get a refill. So, well, Randy, first of all, you've got a situation here where we as outsiders who follow recruiting always don't know the story of what every kid's offer is. We don't know what kids have been offered a gray shirt. We don't know what kids could be offered blue shirts or have been offered a blue shirt, which wouldn't be an initial counter in this class. We don't know what kids have been said. With the new rules that just changed with the NCAA over the last year or two, it used to be you had to take, you had to take 2 years and you had to be in a program. And then once you went on scholarship, that didn't count as an initial counter. Okay, well, they changed it to 1 year now. So a player can go to a football program, walk on 1 year, and then go on scholarship and not count against the numbers. My point with saying this is there's a lot of ways that staffs now can be creative in getting players to campus that don't always count in those numbers. And we'll never really know that, because what they do now with some of these schools is they announce them as part of the recruiting classes, and we don't really know exactly who's going to be a gray shirt or who's going to be a walk-on. And then sometimes you don't know till August when you find out that, you know, three kids didn't show up to find out that they're gray shirt. So my message to everybody is don't get super caught up on these numbers and who's what, because sometimes we never find out. And in the end, these guys spend a lot of time on the Kansas staff, on that recruiting board, coming up with a plan to decide what route is the best way to go for the program. So, I'll start off first offensive lineman, Armaj Adams. I put this on the message board yesterday. I have forecasted him to be a Kansas commitment. I feel good that Emmett Jones has a good enough relationship with him. I also feel good that his teammate, Lawrence Arnold, who's already committed to Kansas, has said a lot of good things about the program. And I just feel good about Armaj Adams. You know, he's a 6'5", 315-pound kid. I don't know if he'll stay at tackle. He maybe would move to a guard, but he's a mean, mauler-type kid, and they've been looking at him for a while. And just a little update here, Keenan Caldwell, he's already been committed to Kansas. Talked to him the other day. He sounds very solid with the Jayhawks. Quan Drake was down to watch him play in his game. I believe it was last Thursday night. A visitor to a recent KU K-State game, Keon Parker. He's got Oregon, Baylor, Nebraska, Iowa State. He's a 2021 recruit. He's a corner, and he is a very good player. His film looks tremendous. You know, he's a guy. He really likes Kansas. He's been up a couple times, so that's a 2021 name to keep an eye on. Moving over to quarterback, Cade Fortin. You know, he visited Syracuse right after he visited Kansas. I'm hearing that SMU could get an unofficial visit from him. And I had heard that the timeline was late November for him, and now I'm hearing this now could go into December. So I don't know if there's some new suitors jumping in on Cade Fortin or not, but I think he's the main quarterback I'm following right now. Another offensive lineman, Leif Magnusson, who came in from Canada. You know, we just talked about his tweet he just put up that he's going to have a phone call with Les Miles today. I know he's got Indiana, Boston College, Washington State. That's where his dad played, Washington State. So that'll be an interesting battle to see what happens there. But I know he had a good time on his visit. Another cornerback in the 2020 class to keep an eye on. Just before our podcast here, I talked to Karan Prunty, a corner from Virginia, and he told me that he plans to visit Kansas on December 6th. So there's a new name into the fold. Elijah Turner, a running back. He announced Kansas offered him. Had a chance to speak with him last night. He's going to visit sometime in December. Josh Remetich, an offensive lineman from Louisiana. He's kind of one of the message board favorites with everybody. He will visit in December. Ashad Clayton, running back from Warren Easton. He's the guy that probably has been followed by most, all the Kansas fans, a four-star running back. He went on his visit to Boulder last week. He did commit to Colorado, but he's going to give the Jayhawks an official visit. And remember, you know, his old high school coach is Tony Hull. And Tony Hull was one of the big reasons that he went to Warren Easton High School 4 years ago. So there's a pretty strong bond there. So that tells me, will Clayton stay with Colorado? He very well could. But the bottom line is, Kansas is going to get a shot. And you cannot discount the relationship that he's got with Tony Hull. Another guy on the defensive side, Bryson Bonds, a safety from Crowley, Texas. He visited recently. Kansas offered him. Clint Bowen was down to watch him play in his high school game during the bye week. He told me he's going to set an official visit. So my point is, Randy, you look at this commitment list and you keep saying this is a numbers game. And the numbers, the kids they're recruiting right now, strongly outweigh the numbers that are available, which tells me a couple things. The staff is still seeing some possible movement on their commitment list, okay? And then number two, I call it protecting the program. They are going out and they are getting on kids to be ready. You never know what's going to happen in recruiting. And if something does, this staff's going to be ready. They're just not going to sit back and say, oh, we're good with the way things are. Because in recruiting, things change every day. And I like what they're doing. Does it confuse me a little bit? Absolutely. Does it make me start making my head spin? Absolutely. But I like the fact I would much rather see them more aggressive than being passive. So I like what I see in the recruiting, but just here in the last, since our last podcast, I think I just rattled off like eight names that maybe we didn't talk about on the previous podcast. So I think there's going to be a lot of fun here over the next 4 to 5 weeks leading up to signing day.
As a self-described recruiting nerd and somebody that wrote my first recruiting article as a freshman at KU for the University of Daily Kansan, I love hearing that. I love all the action and the movement. And you and I talked about it at the end of the summer. We were like, wow, with so many commitments already in place, is it just going to be dull? What are we going to have to talk about? It has been anything but dull, just like this edition of the Inside Slant podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this one. We had a ton of information. We had great guests. Eric Bossy joined us. Shay was in to talk about basketball. Johnny Beck was here to talk about his work post-graduation from the University of Kansas and talk about his work as an analyst on the Jayhawk Network. For John Kirby, for Shay Wildebor, I'm your host, Randy Withers, and I want to remind you one more time, if you enjoy the Inside Slant podcast, which is the best podcast available anywhere for Kansas fans, Kansas football fans, basketball fans, if you enjoy it, if you're a subscriber, thank you very, very much. But tell a friend, share it, you know, show one, know one. If you know one, show one. If you show one, know one. Make sure that people know about the Inside Slant podcast. And if you listen but aren't a subscriber to Jayhawk Slant, there is no better time than now. Get all the information on Bill Self's efforts with the basketball program in the early signing period, as well as everything leading up to National Signing Day on the football side from Kirby and I. Now is the time. Again, thank you for joining us on this edition of the Inside Slant podcast. We will talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.